Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
Get ready to take notes, because school is now in session. Tackling the biggest issues in education, this is Education America. Save the classroom, save the country. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Abigail Johnson.
Well, good evening and welcome to Education America, where we're working to save the classroom so that we can save the country. Join our conversation. K-12 education is the playing field where the battle is on for the future of our country. And as the 16th president, Abraham Lincoln, succinctly stated, the philosophy of the schoolroom in one generation will be the philosophy of government in the next. I am Rebecca Hagstrom, co-host of Education America, and I'm joined in studio with my wonderful new co-host, Abigail Johnson.
So good to be here.
Yeah.
It is an amazing summer day here in Minnesota. One of the few where you just go, you know what? This is a pretty great state to live in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we may not feel
from
the same
May
in a
through
few months,
August.
But it feels pretty good right now.
Right. We know that those long winter days get long. Well, we are excited to turn our attention to a book that actually has been out for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I read it a couple of years ago, but we circled back to it because of everything that's happening in education, because it has done such a great job of really setting and teeing up what we're seeing maybe as problems within our school system, not just K-12, but also at the college level. And the name of that book is The Coddling of the American Mind. And it was written by Greg Lukianoff and Jonathan Haidt. And it started off that they actually wrote an article. I believe it might have been in The Atlantic or Federalist, something like that. And I think it was The Atlantic. And it got so much attention that they decided to go ahead and write an entire book about this topic. And I think people really resonate, whether they're on the left or the right side of the aisle. I think this is an apolitical book that was really taking note of what's happening in our culture at large, and then how that's playing out in parenting and in schools and what have you. And so we decided this is an important book for us to circle back on.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be talking about it from a general standpoint today. And then in a few weeks, we hope to go dig in a little bit deeper and talk about some of these topics on a deeper level, right?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I think is really that just kind of caught my eye and said, yes, we should talk about this book. It has been out now. It's not necessarily a recent release. It was published, I think, back in 2019. However, you know, there's just this phenomena sweeping our country. And the more parents I talk to, and some of these parents are, you know, maybe they're watching a lot of news or trying to be get facts and try to be fair and get the full picture, sort out, you know, what is real, what is, you know, quote unquote, fake news. But the common theme that I hear in all of this is, oh, my gosh, how did we get here?
Mm-hmm.
Some of this stuff just boggles your mind that we're even having this discussion. And, you know, and so this book kind of talks about, you know, from the university perspective, how we got here. And I think part of what is really interesting about this is I don't know, Rebecca, if you ever experienced this, but, you know, back when I was in college, it was, well, universities, they're all just kind of crazy kids. I mean, universities have historically been places of kind of dissent, pushback. People are usually, mm-hmm. though, it's been students pushing back for, you know, more freedom, freedom of speech.
We want to talk about
these big issues. We want to hear the dissenting opinions. You know, that's usually where these things happen. And a lot of the perspective was always, yeah, well, you know, once these kids get out into the real world, they're going to, they'll change their tune. They'll start to see you can't act like this. You can't kind of have, at least that discourse needs to be a little more mm-hmm. respectful and civilized. However, what this book talks about is, yeah, that's really not what's happened.
No, and not only that, but it doesn't end at the college level anymore.
Absolutely.
Now it's pushing all the way into corporate America, where we're seeing a lot of these same people mm-hmm. push their agenda in corporate America, and we're really seeing it change and transform the landscape as a result. So this book really goes into three untruths. Mm-hmm. The untruth of fragility, they call it. The saying, what doesn't kill you makes you weaker. So when you think about how we've usually heard that terminology, we hear, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I believe that they referenced Nietzsche in that case. But instead, this idea of the untruth of fragility being something that's a common theme that we're seeing across America, it seems to be the opposite. What doesn't kill you makes you weaker. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And then the second untruth is the untruth of emotional reasoning. Always trust your feelings.
Oh, yes. I mean, doesn't that work great for us?
Yeah.
I mean, especially as parents. I tell my kids all the time. Well, if you feel like it, then, I mean, it must be so.
Well, and as much as we might know intellectually that that isn't true, I can't believe how many people practice this.
I know.
And even probably yes. even all of us do at some point, you know, just do what you think is right. You know, trust mm-hmm. your feelings. You hear that saying a lot, but that has actually exploded into something completely different than what it was originally intended. And now we have these subjective standards of pain and harm, and very different than what it used to be, where they were talking mainly about physical safety. And we're going to talk about that in a little while too. And then the third untruth is the untruth of us versus them. Life is a battle between good people and bad people, as though that's the only two options. If you don't agree with me, Abigail, you are evil.
Oh, man.
And you are racist.
Well, that ends this radio partnership. That was a quick run.
Lasted two shows.
I know.
Actually, thankfully, we do agree on quite a bit. But I think we can handle a little bit of disagreement there. That's for sure. But yeah, this whole idea of the untruth of fragility, you know, one of the things that they reference in the book is peanut allergies as an example, that if we really want resilient kids, we need to expose them mm-hmm. to hardship and difficulties. And one of the things that the authors say is as countries and cultures grow more and more wealthy and strong, they tend to grow weaker. I use the word strong loosely, mm-hmm. healthy and strong, wealthy, but they tend to develop more weak individuals because they become more and more comfortable. They haven't faced the same hardships. And one of the examples they gave to compare it to is peanut allergies.
Yes, that was really
interesting. I know. Mm-hmm. And so running a school,
yes.
you know, in the early years of our school, I will say, I heard a lot more about peanut allergies back then, it'll be 20 years now this year, than I do now, which is kind of interesting. But back then, peanut allergies were really a big deal, and we did have several students that had severe peanut allergies. And I did wonder, gee, why does it seem like this is more common? Well, it turns out they did a research study on this and found that if kids are exposed to peanuts and other legumes, they are actually less likely at young ages, infant mm-hmm. ages, they are more likely to not or less likely to develop an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were comparing that to our society. So if this idea that our kids are fragile, we have to be so careful, Sure, if your child has a real allergy, you do need to be careful.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I don't want to undermine the kids who have true allergies, but the point is that overall...
Yes, it's more of a macro perspective. Why in the world are we seeing more of this as a society as a whole?
Right.
And that was just, I mean, if you look at even, I remember growing up and, we ran around all the time with no shoes.
Yeah.
No shoes outside. I do remember digging a massive hole in our backyard. My mom was not pleased because I was told that, you know, we had learned something in history about the Romans did these mud baths.
Yeah.
So I decided to make my own.
You were
going to
make your own mud bath.
Which, I mean, and all
that. That's something my boys would have done.
So it was, she was real happy with me that they, but overall, the point was just we were outside barefoot. Running around, whereas, you know, how often do kids do that now?
Right.
And that was just a really interesting part of the study. Kind of the more affluent societies become, almost the more sheltered the students, you know, their young children become, and then kind of what is that doing from a variety of factors?
And
interesting.
I think back to my own childhood, and I used to be able to bike downtown to the Ben Franklin and get penny candy. And our parents didn't ever worry about us going downtown on Main Street. Granted, I was in a little town. And I think, unfortunately, there's always some reality for why we end up with this fragility notion, because of course now we hear more about children being abducted, and so nobody wants their child to be abducted, of course, but we take one story that we hear and we catastrophize. Remember, one of the things he talked about is this whole notion of cognitive distortions and how our society is starting to really teach kids to have cognitive distortions, when in all reality, if they want to treat anxiety, what they do is they actually treat them by helping them get rid of cognitive distortions.
Yes.
So we're raising kids with the very distortions that cause anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And we wonder why we have more anxiety
Yep.
in our kids and in our culture at large.
And then what we've noticed too is, you know, it's not just what's happening with parenting. This is obviously, this book goes into, which is why we're dividing it up into several shows. We both kind of looked at the book and went, wow, there's a lot of really interesting stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, looking at how education has changed, what are we doing? And again, this particular book talks a lot about what was happening in the university.
Right.
But I think now, even in a short 3 years since the book has been published, I think we would both say we've seen an awful lot of what they discuss in the book in even, you know, high school, middle school, elementary schools
100%,
as well. So we thought that this was a really interesting thing, mostly number one for parents to be aware of. But number two, I think there are parents out there, you know, number one that are saying, how in the world did we get here? How are we even having these discussions that they couldn't even imagine having when their child, you know, when they were going to school? And number two, okay, so how do we raise resilient kids? You know, what, how can I as a parent do this? I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a, you know, I don't have special skills with this. So what do we do then to create resilient kids?
And I think we have to, based upon, you know, this book and others, we have to really be countercultural in a lot of ways, because the culture would say focus on safety. You know, that's another, that second untruth is trust your feelings. And it talks about how emotional safety has come to be associated with physical safety. So in the past, if we talked about kids getting bullied or PTSD, or even safety itself, safety referenced physical safety. And now it's been transformed and broadened. These terms have been broadened to mean things that are very different when they than what they were originally intended to mean. So now you hear people say, well, I feel unsafe because that person disagrees with me, or that person uses trigger words and that makes me feel unsafe. When really they're talking about emotional safety, not physical safety. But by virtue of the fact that they're using the word safe, it elevates the supposed harm that is occurring, when in actuality that's actually, again, squelching one of the values of this country, which is to have a diversity of thought and opinions. Mm-hmm. And so if I can't have an opinion without it triggering you and you saying, well, now I feel unsafe, I feel harmed, you're bullying me or whatever, that shuts down the conversation.
Yep.
And that's what we're starting to see.
And
all
then
across.
You start seeing kids or even in some adults saying, you know, we are engaging in self-censorship.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to go there. I don't want to get dinged.
I don't want to be told that I'm a racist. I don't want to be told that I'm causing someone harm and what have you. Exactly. Well, you are listening to Education America, where Abigail Johnson and I are discussing the book Coddling of the American Mind and discussing how these three untruths, the untruth of fragility, the untruth of emotional reasoning, and the untruth of us versus them are impacting education in America. And we're glad that you're with us and hope you're enjoying our conversation here. As we consider the untruth of us versus them, Abigail, they've really kind of brought this down into a level of not only us versus them, but evil versus good. It's almost like Marxist in the ideology. When you think back to our high school days, back when we still were learning about Marxism. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the proletariat being the working class and the bourgeois, you know, being the educated class, and that they had the power. It was this power struggle between the working class and the educated class. Now they're taking that same dichotomy and they're using it in terms of good versus evil, minority versus white, especially male, Christian, capitalist. And they're really creating this division and saying one is good and one is bad. And it doesn't seem to even take into consideration intent.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be bad just simply because you did some type of a microaggression that you weren't even intending to cause anybody any harm, but you are considered racist anyway.
Yes. And so that was one thing that, you know, we thought that's really interesting because, you know, how does this affect, how does that affect the culture? How does that, and what I mean by that is you were just talking about basically we're, you know, discussing intersectionality. Mm-hmm. You know, we're basically ranking people based on, in many cases, aspects that they don't necessarily have any control over.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have any control over the color of your skin. You don't have any control over the way you were born, your height, the color of your hair, whatever it is. And so, you know, what does that do in schools?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they really take a look at the university setting and looking at when we're looking at all of the things that separate us, all the ways that we're different.
Yeah.
You know, how does that affect the school culture? How does that affect, you know, how does that affect friendships?
Exactly.
How does that affect, you know, is that educating students? Is that giving students the opportunity to really look and talk through difficult issues? Because, you know, really, in some cases with education, there isn't a clear answer. There are many issues in this world, although unfortunately social media likes to distill it down to a bumper sticker slogan.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these issues, they're multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
And we need the freedom to really look at, number one, facts and data regarding solutions. But also, you know, it might be, you know, there may be a variety of contributing factors and there needs to be opportunities to really discuss all of that without being branded a particular thing or another, but instead having civil discussions, which is really, I think, what made someone like Martin Luther King Jr. such a fantastic. Obviously, he did many wonderful things for the country, but one of the key components of what he did was he brought people together. So he emphasized commonality rather than all the ways that we're different. Because if you're all you're focusing in is all the ways you're different, and to be very frank, all the ways that someone else has it better than you or easier than you.
Yeah, well, it's creating that
it just doesn't
victimization,
work.
You know, mentality in people, and it's not helpful for them to focus on what they don't have either. You want to help people focus on what they can do. And I think you're right. Martin Luther King Jr. was a unifier, and he focused on common values that our culture had. And he also, even though he was the leader of this whole, you know, equal rights march and that type of thing, the idea was that he was pointing back to the Constitution and saying that they had it right when they wrote the Constitution. They just didn't act on it right away. And I think he used the term promissory note. The Constitution and the Declaration of Independence was a promissory note for the future, recognizing that, yeah, we're not there yet. Mm-hmm. And clearly the civil rights movement of the 1960s was demonstrating the areas where we weren't there yet. But that didn't mean that he threw the baby out with the bathwater, which is what we're seeing today. America is bad. America was found as these founders were racist. And that's what the kids are being taught in school now. And we're going to be talking the next show about some of the social studies standards and some of the ways that that's playing out. But this idea of unifying around commonality versus unifying around enmity,
yes,
which is what we're seeing happen. And that's because they're really using some of this Marxist ideology of power, kind of these power struggles, as though that's all there is one or the other. You're either powerful or you're not, or you're good or you're evil. And these are fallacies. These are dichotomies
Absolutely.
That are not real. And like you say, is that what we want in our nation's schools?
Mm-hmm.
We want to find our commonality.
Absolutely.
And we want our kids to be focused in on learning and not being indoctrinated with this type of mindset.
Mm-hmm. In addition to that, there was really a great section in the book that, and again, you know, you and I, Rebecca, were at very different stages of parenting. So yeah. I always love listening to your stories, you know, sit there going, tell me about the other side.
I was going to say, I'm on the other side.
And it's just, I love hearing, you know, from people that are a few steps ahead of me.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I really thought was just fascinating about the book was talking about the untruth of always trust your feelings.
Yes.
And I know we touched on that briefly, but I thought it was just worth maybe going into a little bit more deeply.
Yeah.
And I will say I had to laugh because I was reading this book and kind of going through taking notes. And as I was doing this, one of my youngest daughter ran up to me and oh, she was mad. She was so mad. And she was mad because she had been playing with two little girls, one that we knew and one was a new friend. I think we were at a park or something. And this little girl wandered over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently in their very young conversation, this new girl said that she was not my daughter's best friend. And my daughter was not happy about this. And it just in a way that is so adorable because they're really young and how ridiculous is this? And so she came over to me, Mommy. You know that girl over there? She points to this girl. She goes, she said she's not my best friend. And I looked at her and I said, well, we don't even know her name. So I think it's okay if you guys aren't best friends yet. I think that's okay, honey. And I'm laughing because I'm literally reading this section in the book about always trust your feelings.
Yeah.
And, you know, but isn't that what we're seeing with some parenting, but you know, what we're seeing in the school is, well, if you feel this way, if you don't feel safe, then you're not.
Right.
Instead of adults standing up and saying,
actually,
you know, I'm sorry you feel that way. That's, I'm sure that's very uncomfortable. Let's talk about that. But I do want you to know, that no one is going to physically harm you. Let's take some deep breaths and practice, you know, being calm. And let's talk about, you know, where that's, let's move forward with this.
That is what really builds resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. That's not what we see happening on a regular basis in our schools today. And it's a subjective feelings on the part of whoever considers themselves a victim. And it becomes so extreme in some cases that it's hard to believe that it's even reality. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave the example at Brown University,
yes,
of the debate about rape culture, mm-hmm, and how they were bringing in one speaker who said, who wanted to talk about the fact that America is a culture of rape. And the other speaker was going to come in and say, actually, I don't see America as a culture of rape. And she was going to share her own experience about being raised in Afghanistan, where there really is a rape culture, according to this woman, where she was raped and where women get punished for being raped, where she was beaten to the point of losing an eye. And yet, even knowing that, the Brown University students did not want her coming on the campus, mm-hmm, because they felt that by simply having her imply, mm-hmm, that America wasn't a rape culture would undermine the lived experience of those people who think,
absolutely,
it is. So they don't even want to hear. I mean, this is beyond logic,
oh,
in,
yes,
my opinion. I mean, who is unwilling to listen to a person's real experience that has truly lived in a culture of rape and help them see that America isn't so bad? That's not to say that there's no rape that occurs.
Yes.
That isn't to say that maybe there is still a loose attitude towards it on college campuses. But to say it's a rape culture, again, it's those extreme words where we're expanding the definition, mm-hmm, beyond what it was intended to be.
Yes. And I think that was really interesting, too, about the situation at Brown, because actually in the book, I believe they were both ideologically, both speakers were very similar, as in I think the book describes them both as they both came from a feminist perspective.
Yes,
that's the only,
correct,
reason why I bring,
yes,
this up was,
yeah,
she wasn't some outlier saying that, right, like you said, this, mm-hmm, doesn't exist.
Right.
She wasn't saying that.
Right.
It was more of words matter.
Right.
And while we want to always have a society where women are valued and, mm-hmm, you know, have safety, that also words matter, and,
yeah,
that she didn't, it was more of, it seemed to me, mm-hmm, without obviously being at the lecture, seemed like more of a semantic disagreement, mm-hmm, and even that was triggering for,
yes,
the students. So,
yeah.
Yes, yeah, so that was just a really interesting thing. There's just a ton in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Parents, I know that, you know, if you're listening to this, this probably is your 15 minutes of trying to catch up on news or educate yourselves on something. So it's a great read, mm-hmm, if you have the time. But we will also, in future shows, just be going a little bit more in depth into some of these topics, just because we feel like they're incredibly, mm-hmm, useful as,
yeah,
parents are desperately trying to navigate, how did we get here? And oh my goodness, how do I help my child navigate this and help create a child that is resilient and,
exactly,
who can withstand and has the emotional capacity to weather some of these storms and understand, mm-hmm, you know, facts and logic. And so we will be going into more of this in later shows, just in case you,
yes,
don't have time to,
yes,
read the book.
And they will be a little bit more specific too, going into safetyism and how it's affecting schools, parenting, and what have you. So,
mm-hmm,
but we hope that you've enjoyed this conversation today. And we ask that you continue to join us on Education America. We are going to be really delving into some great topics that are very pertinent. And this is obviously one of them. And as you know, we do plan on discussing further implications of this changed thinking that we're seeing in the book summarized by Coddling the Mind. And you can listen to this show and you can listen to other shows and podcasts at savetheclassroom.com. That's savetheclassroom.com. And please follow us also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We'd love to have you join us again next week. Have a good night.
Thank
Thanks,
you so
Abigail.
Much.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.